The organizers asked me to host also the next discussion, the European Union and Human Rights, because our colleague Heidi Hautala, the chairwoman from the subcommittee of human rights of European Parliament, she is now today in Belarus, which is an important mission for any European. Today, actually, I don't know what the panelists would prefer, to stay on the panel or not. It's up to you to decide. I'm very comfortable with you. But I also would like to invite to join us Mr. Gavrilliadis from European Commission, from Directorate General of Justice, Freedom and Security. Because we will have an opportunity to ask the questions. We are interested to learn more what the Commission does. And now we will have video address of Mrs. Heidi Hautala, but organizers asked me to warn you that this is not tested, and if that will not work, because you never know what does technical equipment, then the speech will be distributed to the participants of that conference, or you will read it. Okay, no, I'm wrong. So in that case, Mrs. Hibashkova will read the statement of Mrs. Hautala.
So 20 years after the fall, and almost 6 years after the accession of post-communist countries to the European Union, dear participants of the conference on the crimes of the communist regimes, unfortunately I cannot be present in your conference because I'm going on a European Parliament's fact-finding mission delegation to Belarus. So 20 years after the fall of the Iron Curtain and almost 6 years after the accession of post-communist countries to the European Union, it is natural to ask the question, how should one deal with the past with the communist states? How should we evaluate the actions of the communist regimes behind the Iron Curtain? For me, the point of view is especially human rights and justice. It is clear that the communist regimes did violate human rights, as the resolution of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe of the 25th of January 2006 states. But it is not as clear how we should deal with the past. In my contribution, I will touch the question of the power of interpretation, the need for a free and tolerant public debate, the complex issue of transparency, and the diverse roles of politicians and researchers in what the Germans call Vergangenheitspolitik, politics of the past. So, and the question is, who interprets the truth? The politicians have a great responsibility in interpreting the so-called truth. How do we see our past and its consequences to the present? The one who has the power to tell us what is the true state of our society has the power in politics as well. And I would like to emphasize that assessing this question can't be made just from a legal point of view. I believe that the historical and political side of the question cannot be overemphasized. As said, the interpretation and reconciliation of the past is finally a matter of dispute on whose version about the course of events in history is right. It can be described as a contest about the right to speak. Who has the right to say what and about whose past? In the German academic discourse, there is a concept, Deutungshoheit, which means the power of interpretation. It is a hegemonic position from where it is possible to dictate the right way to see historical events and to give powerful meanings to them. Both the victims and the offenders seek to gain that position and, via that process, a justification for their own interpretation of the past. Now, even if the dealing with the past does not achieve any ultimate goal, like a true reconciliation, debate as such is already a sign of success. a Finnish historian, an outstanding specialist of the history of the GDR, Seppo Hentilä, has stated, "The society of consensus is not the yardstick for the solidity of democracy. More important is the capability to tolerate differences of opinion and handle them in a non-violent way. The stronger the democracy in the country, the more critical, open and tolerant is its way of dealing with the past." Now, all this means that one group should not claim having the only valid interpretation of the truth, but space should be given for public debate. Even if fully objective interpretations of historical facts are not possible, and objective historical narratives do not in reality exist, academic historians use scientific tools to study the past, and they try to be as impartial as possible. Thus, the role of research is crucial in the mastery of history. It is also crucial to understand that research into any course of events in history is unending. Ever new layers unfold in the process of science. What do we then need? We need a scientific overview of the injustices committed by the communist states. The injustices need to be assessed via an unhindered dialogue in order to search for the best possible solutions. The goal of the process should be a reconciliation within the post-communist societies and a strengthened European integration across the former East-West divide. There has to be room for self-criticisms of the offenders as well. The whole goal of the process is to attain a more unified and harmonious society. One criteria of the success of Vergangenheitspolitik is whether the offenders can speak out, and not only in courtrooms. It is important to note that the sole fact that somebody has been working in the machinery of a totalitarian regime is not sufficient to make the person guilty. It needs to be defined how the person was involved and why he was involved, or she. The guilty person should be encouraged to make this inquiry by themselves. I'd like to quote the late president of Estonia, a great person, Lennart Meri. He once wisely said, "We can forgive, but we can never forget." All in all, we need to have a multifaceted view of the events of the past. Democratic regimes can provide a ground for this. Interpretations of historical facts should not be imposed by means of simple majority decisions by parliaments. Now, what about transparency? I understand that there are two quite different ways to use archives. Some see that the documents should be maximally open to everybody. Others, again, believe that more privacy and data protection must be taken into account. I belong to those who see some problems with the radical and maximal openness of the data. For example, documents stored by security structures can be misleading, and it may be wise to open the archives first to a group of qualified researchers. Full public access to documents could also be painful for the victims, an important consideration. Now, all this does not at all mean that we should not make a genuine effort towards opening up archives, but steps must be taken to ensure that this process is not abused for political witch hunts. There should be a clear legal framework for access to documents held in the archives of internal security services, secret police and intelligence agencies. I emphasize that documents must be available in their broad context. An uncritical, random-based digitalization of data may not be helpful to understanding the complexities of the past. The access to documents is just a starting point. Analysis and interpretation are then needed for conclusions. This should be done with the help of academic historians and other researchers. This makes the process more responsible and helps in avoiding uncritical tabloid journalism. So, the politics of the past shall not become instrumentalizing the past for politics. What is the role of politics? As said, politicians have a big responsibility in interpreting the truth about the past. Politicians can make special decisions in helping the reconciliation with the past. For example, when in Switzerland there was a big sensation about the country's role in the Second World War, it was decided that all the archives needed would be opened to a foreign group of academic researchers. Best practices should also be shared with other countries. For example, Norway and Sweden can give us good examples relating to the opening up of the secret police. The activities of the secret police in those two countries after the Second World War have been in depth researched into. These projects were initiated by Parliament, and the victims were by law given access to their own data in the archives. A good quality debate about reconciling the history transfers to the society via the press, via the free press, I'd like to emphasize, and for example via school books. On the other hand, the content of school books can become a matter of fierce political dispute. Civic education should promote critical thinking, not simplified dichotomies. Politicians can make significant decisions on the basis of initiatives arising from the civil society. In Finland, a book by Elina Sana claimed that there were more Jews delivered to Nazi Germany in the Second World War than had been earlier estimated. This claim provoked international attention and a big discussion in Finland some years ago. Thus, the Finnish government decided to start a major research project called Finland Prisoners of War and Extraditions during 1939 till 1955. So, finally, what could be the role of the European Parliament and the European Union? Whereas a core objective of the European integration process is to ensure respect for fundamental rights, democracy and the rule of law in the future, it is an adequate role for the EU to contribute to solidifying and integrating the post-communist societies. Unfortunately, the EU has been unable to close up the historical gap between Eastern and Western Europe. How then do we achieve progress in integration in a Europe in which violations of fundamental rights remain unsettled? Firstly, existing platforms such as the United Nations or the Council of Europe should be more used. As for the EU, the resolution of the European Parliament on European conscience and totalitarianism from April 2009 has many elements to build on. Firstly, initiatives for documentation and activities of non-governmental organizations must be supported financially. The resolution also calls for a platform of European memory and conscience to provide support for networking among national research institutes which are specializing in the subject of totalitarian history. A pan-European documentation center for the victims of all totalitarian regimes should be created. The Parliament also called for the strengthening of the existing relevant financial instruments with a view to providing support for professional historical research. Now, to close my contribution to your conference, I am convinced that the awareness of history is one of the preconditions of avoiding violations of human rights in the future. Societies that neglect the past have no future. And Europe will not be duly united unless it is able to form a common view and understanding of its history through a dialogue. As the European Parliament in its before mentioned resolution said, no political body, no political party should have a monopoly on interpreting history. Judging the past lessons can guide us in the present and towards the future. For example, the war against terrorism, which goes on right now, produces serious violations of human rights and violations of international humanitarian law. The European Parliament considers that, for instance, the member states of the European Union are for their part responsible for the CIA prisoner transportations to Guantanamo and for detentions in secret prisons on European soil. As inevitably, the national security services are having more transnational cooperation in this fight against terrorism. Who supervises them? Who controls them? And I'd like to quote Britain's most senior judges, who recently ordered that the government must reveal evidence on MI5 complicity in the torture. of a British resident called Binyamin Muhammad. The protection of relations between secret services, according to the British judges, is not anymore a valid reason to not publish these files. The citizens have the right to know, and this is also an important form of public scrutiny. All in all, it has to be guaranteed that the rule of law is followed, not only in the past, but also today and in the future. That is why our subcommittee on human rights in the European Parliament gives a great attention to further developing international justice and accountability. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this opportunity to hear the very englobing opinion insight in the human rights regarding the totalitarian regimes and also human rights situation currently. I would like to go back to 2007, when there was negotiation among EU member states on EU framework decision on racism and xenophobia. Poland and the Baltic states demanded that the crimes committed by Stalin's regime are included in the scope of the bill and that there be a pan-European ban on excusing, denying or trivializing those crimes. There was much of debate. We were accused even of being anti-Europeans, and finally our requests and amendments were refused. But in order to pacify those who were upset about that rejection, the EU justice ministers agreed on a separate declaration to be attached to the framework decision at some future point in time. And then they said also that the European Commission has to organize a public hearing on the crimes of totalitarian regimes, which took place in year 2008, and that was the first such a hearing organized by so high European institution as the Commission. I had the honor to take part in, as an expert in that. And then also Commission was instructed to report to the Council within 2 years after the entry into force of the framework decision whether additional instrument, legal instrument, is needed to cover publicly condoning, denying, or grossly trivializing gross crimes of genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes directed against a group of persons defined by reference to criteria other than race, color, religion, descent, or national or ethnic origin, such as social status or political convictions. This legal language means that Commission has to produce a report of how countries once subjected to Soviet domination and communism are dealing with that and what should be done on European level. Here we have from DG in Justice, Mr. Gavrilidis, who can tell where Commission stands now and what will be the future deliberations in that direction. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, as Ms. Cagnette said, we did one part of our homework. That means we organized in Brussels in 8 April 2008 a public hearing, which was the first time, as you very correctly pointed, that the European institution organized such an event. It was a very big success. I think because more than 100 persons attained, and also there was a very, very important element because two Russian historians also attained, and the debate was really very fruitful and very, very good. But our main obligation now is to prepare the report you referred to. In order to prepare these reports, we gathered, of course, all the elements from the hearing, but also from various events, like the one we have now. And we also financed a study, a factual study, in the member states, in the 27 member states, to see what happens, how member states manage the totalitarian past. This study was carried out by an independent institution. It's a Spanish university organization, and is in the final point. It's being finalized, and it will be very soon published in our website. It will be sent to the member state representations, and after sending them, it will be published in our website. Of course, the Commission is not linked by the conclusions of this study, but in any case, as I said before, the study is factual. What happens? What are the laws? What are the practices in the member states? Now we're focusing our work on the preparation of the report. The report has to be ready before the end of this year, so before the end of 2010. And the aim of the report is to provoke a political debate in the Council of the European Union. I cannot tell you anything about the substance of the report because there is nothing to tell. The report didn't start being prepared. And in any case, before the end, it will be very difficult because it's an internal commission procedure, so the draft will leave from our offices will be changed a lot. As you know, Commission is a college, is a collective body where every commissioner have a say on the work of the other commissioners, and the final product, of course, will be approved by the Commission as a college and will be sent to the Council to have this political debate. So I'm ready to answer any other question, please.
Could you also tell the timetable you have for the report, Commission, and then next Council?
The timetable. For the moment, first thing, in a few weeks, you will have in our website published the study. As I said, the study is made by an independent organization and is factual, but it's really very useful. I had the opportunity to see the first drafts, and is really, really a very good work who helps to understand what happens in the member states from a factual point of view. Second step, the Commission, we work on the report in the months to come. The report will be finalized because it has to be translated, it has to be approved, etc., to all working languages at the end of the year, let's say December 2010. Then it will be submitted to the Council, and then it's up to the presidency, either presidency from 1st 2010 or afterwards, to put it on the agenda and to discuss it in the, I presume, Justice and Home Affairs Council. And then, of course, I don't know. It depends on the political leaders.
So it means that we have to work with our political leaders, because finally, the ministers, our ministers of justice, will be discussing it on the Justice and Home Affairs Council. You would allow me to put the first question. European Parliament confirmed in the office the new commission. And the new commissioner for Home Affairs and Justice is Vivian Reding from Luxembourg. She is commissioner with great experience. This is her third mandate. I would like to ask you, is she already in the subject? And what... is your general feeling how we will proceed, with enthusiasm, with moderate reluctance, or how do you feel?
I think my personal impression, because I worked on the preparation of her hearing in the Parliament and we had meetings with her, etc., is that she's very sensitive generally in the area of human rights, fundamental rights. So she's really very keen to work in the area of fundamental rights. And she has very strong positions on democracy and fundamental rights. As regards this specific issue, she's very, very interesting to this. But there is not only the preparation of the report which is, of course, it's a very important political issue. But as Mrs. Hautala said, there is another aspect which is ongoing, is the aspect of financing. And since the Parliament took a very strong position in its resolution of April 2009, on the importance of using existing programs of the European Union in order to preserve memory, and one, of course, main important thing is the platform, existing programs can be very helpful. And one of the programs, which is, let's say, the program for this issue, but it's not the only one, but it's the one we refer always, is the program related to Europe for Citizens program, and in particular an action called, cite exact title of the action, Active European Remembrance Action. This is a very important program. Unfortunately, is not managed by Mrs. Reding. She's not directly responsible for this program, because it's our colleagues dealing with education and culture. It's more like an education-oriented program. But we're very closely associated, and we work together on all these issues, and we're consulted, on a regular basis on all the activities by our colleagues dealing with this program. Under this program could be financed projects linked to the preservation of the main sites and memorials associated with the mass deportation, the former concentration camps, and other large-scale martyrdoms and extermination sites, as well as the archives documenting these events, and for keeping alive the memory of the victims, as well the memory of those who, under extreme condition, rescued people from the Holocaust, but it's not only for Holocaust, project linked to the commemoration of the victim of mass extermination and mass deportation associated with Stalinism. It's very clear in the legal basis of the program, as well as the preservation of the memorials and archives documenting these events, etc., etc., etc. So, under this program, for example, projects linked with the platform, not only with the platform, but also with the platform, can't be financed. The issue is that the Commission never takes the initiative to go to see the people. The people have to come to request for financing, and then the Commission considers possibilities of financing. This is one of the programs. I will not mention other, because there are many, so many financing programs in the Commission, which, if you go on the website of the Europa, you can see we can be linked with the promotion of human rights, with the promotion of democracy, tolerance, etc. But this is the main program which be of direct interest of our debate. Thank you very much.
I can confirm that it works, because the Latvian institution building a memorial already got a grant from that program in the year 2009, but competition is enormous. So the floor is yours. Please do ask the questions.
Dobrý den, Jan Šinágl, angažovaný občan, nezávislý publicista, Čechošvýcar, mimochodem. Pár krátkých poznámek. Máme tady totalitu mediální, ekonomickou i politickou. Mimochodem, poslední obchod tohoto druhu, Ukrajina, Irán, by měl být varovným signálem. Je smutné, že toto setkání nevysílá Česká televize přímo. Nedávno se zakázala Dělnická strana, soudní proces byl vysílán přímo, i když jen o chviličku. Česká televize to snad byla, možná odvysílá nějaký štěk v podvečerních hodinách, možná se mýlím, a stejní hosté budou pozváni do hlavní relace večer do hlavních zpráv nebo do Události a komentářů. Je to o morálce a dobrých mrazích, mravech. Je to o politicích. A obávám se, že impuls musí vít od těch, kteří jsou nespochybnitelní a charismatičtí. A já se obávám, že jich je ještě stále menšina, nejenom u nás, ale i v Evropském parlamentu. A že se obávám, že ten dirigent, který určuje ty hlavní tahy, je stále ještě na východě, má k tomu dlouholeté zkušenosti, možnosti a dobrou praxi. A poslední věc. ilustrující, doufám, že to byla neschopnost, ale přišel jsem jako první na tuto konferenci v 8 hodin a byl jsem vpuštěn jako poslední. Dostal jsem informace neověřené, ale z důvěrného zdroje, že pracovník bezpečnostního aparátu Úřadu vlády České republiky, země Evropské unie, měl nařízeno, aby Jan Schinagl nebyl vpuštěn. Vpuštěn jsem byl, děkuji, o demokracii se musí bojovat i na Úřadě vlády České republiky.
Thank you. That is more a commentary, not a question. Thank you. Please do use opportunity to question the representative of the European Commission on legislative way to that report, which is so important for us all, because the purpose of that report will be to address the crimes of Stalinism in European legislation, in the which will be transposed later in national legislation. Yes, yes, please do. Question.
Dobrý den, jméno je Martin Mejstřík, jsem bývalý senátor Českého parlamentu. Ono je těžké se ptát pana komisaře, ani si nejsem jistý, jestli je komisař, tak se omlouvám. Protože se domnívám, že daleko větší díl práce je na nás, na politicích jednotlivých národních parlamentů a na europoslancích. Nicméně při té poslední konferenci i při té letošní, tu první myslím v roce 2008, která zahájila jakýsi proces, který nasměrovává vyrovnávání se s komunismem do Evropského parlamentu a na pole Evropské unie, i na té dnešní konferenci, letošní konferenci, pořád váháme a vlastně sami nemáme jasno v tom, zdá se mi, co to komunismus je. Jestli jsou nějaké jiné druhy komunismu než ten totalitní. A tak na to jsem se chtěl zeptat tady, možná asi váš osobní názor, předpokládám, že Evropská komise na to žádný názor ještě nemá, ale jestli se náš host z Evropské komise domnívá, že existují jiné komunismy než ty totalitní komunismy.
It's a very difficult question, and I think that the role of the Commission is not to proceed as a political scientist, to qualify what is totalitarianism or what is not totalitarianism, or if there is a good communism, if I understand well your question, or a bad communism. I think that these kind of issues are so well presented in European conscience. So as human beings, not as political or as administrative personnel, we have a very clear idea of what totalitarianism is. I myself, I'm a Greek, I'm 52 years old, and I had the chance to live under colonial regime, and I know what totalitarianism is. So I don't think that there is any good or bad totalitarianism. I think that every totalitarianism is bad, and is not a political issue. It's evidence. So it's my personal opinion, because I didn't want to give you just a stupid bureaucratic answer saying that the Commission has nothing to say about that. But I'm giving my personal opinion. Thank you.
Yeah. Now we are at the point, 10 minutes late, but I will take three questions, what I see in the back, all three at the same time. Altogether there are five questions. Okay, but not commentaries, short questions, five, and then answers. Please, we will take all five in the same time, one after another. Please. We will begin with you standing, and then gentlemen to the left, and then gentlemen in the front, then you, and then you.
Well, I'm Marcel van Amersfoort. I'm a member of the Netherlands Center for Totalitarianism Studies. And the question is to totalitarianism. There is a difference being made by several of us here, as if there is a difference between Stalinism and communism, as which implies that if we just get rid of Stalin and Stalinism, the bad past will disappear, whereas Stalinism is nothing else but a form of communism based on the principles of Marxism-Leninism. So that's just one point to be made clear. And in the definitions that are used in the European Union and in this conference, we should stop speaking of Stalinism and replace it just by communism. Because that's one of the things that Anders mentioned, and what was mentioned in the speech of Mrs. Kautela. She said that there should be a biased approach and that there's no monopoly on the truth. And unfortunately, she's not there, so I cannot direct my question to her. But maybe someone else on the panel can respond to that. If there is supposed to be a biased approach and there's no monopoly on the truth, well, then that's a very, that's basically a wrong idea, because it's about, you know, you can discuss and you can argue about opinions, but you cannot discuss and you cannot argue about facts. And the facts are that there are loads of criminal acts that were committed by those regimes. And my question is, how does the panel see this question of the point made by Mrs. Kautela that there is a biased approach and there's supposed to be a balanced approach, whereas, as Mr. Hamdahl said, the socialists are basically still in control of the debate.
Short questions, please. Short questions. So now the gentleman to the right, and also I appeal to you, short questions, otherwise we will not have coffee.
My name is Pág Jarmuska from Budapest, from the Institute of 1956. Two really brief practical questions. Is there any plan from the Commission to use these proceedings of this conference? Because, of course, for example, Hungary made a lengthy report about the not only the crimes committed in Hungary by the communist regime, but also the aftermath of the 20 years. And the second question, is there any possibility...
I'm short. Okay,
yeah,
okay,
yeah. Really?
Yeah, okay,
that,
yeah.
Is there any possibility directly connect to the institute who makes the report or makes this collection of data?
That is to you, to Spanish Institute, which made the study.
There is any
possibility to contact. Okay, yeah. Please, gentlemen in front, also short question.
It will be very short. My name is Christian Garner, historian from Sweden. I fully agree with all the points made by Marek van Hammersfeld, and I just want to add substance to that. That's very important. Stalinism is communism. And the question is, will you heed this?
Will we heed?
Pay heed to that question. I suppose that
lead. Okay.
Pay attention to.
Okay.
To that.
Yeah. Now the gentleman at the right of the hall.
Dobrý den. Jmenuji se Martin Vadas. Jsem dokumentarista, filmař. Posledně jsem udělal takovou rekonstrukci vlastně procesu s doktorkou Miladou Horákovou a jejími druhy na základě autentických dochovaných komunistických záznamů toho procesu. To, co mě zajímá, je vlastně, jestli opravdu víme, co to je ten komunismus a kdo byli komunisté. Myslím si, že máme velikánský informační deficit a že ten veřejný diskurs se zejména v naší republice nějakým způsobem zaměřuje na honění agentů státní bezpečnosti, honění důstojníků státní bezpečnosti a v podstatě o komunistech jako takových vlastně víme velice málo. Tady máme vyhledávače na ty agenty, tady máme vyhledávače internetové na ty důstojníky a tak dále. My vlastně jako můžeme se k ním dostat, ale o tom, kdo byl členem komunistické strany, v podstatě nemůžeme říct vůbec nic, protože takovou pomůcku tady nemáme a tuto zpracováno nemáme. My vlastně nevíme, kdo byl komunista. A nevíme strašně moc dalších věcí. Myslím si, že máme neúplné životopisy. To znamená, zajímalo by mě, jestli Evropskou komisi zajímá vlastně, koho třeba Česká republika vysílá jako nějaký reprezentanty vlastně do Evropské komise. Jestli známe vlastně třeba práce, akademické práce vlastně člověka, který studoval v Sovětském svazu a který je dneska komisařem. Mě by zajímalo prostě, jestli by se Evropská komise neměla zajímat o to, aby tyto životopisy byly doplněny, aby bylo požadováno, že kdo má zastávat jakousi veřejnou funkci, tak by v podstatě měl být totálně transparentní. Ty jeho práce by měly viset na internetu. Měla by se vlastně vést o tom polemika vlastně, jako jestli ty práce mají tu relevanci, kterou dostali kdysi dávno, třeba v Sovětském svazu, anebo jestli ten autor se od nich nějakým způsobem odříká, nebo prostě se jich zříká. Takže to jsem chtěl říct, že ten veřejný diskurs má velký deficit v té věcnosti. To znamená, my nevíme, kdo byli komunisté. My tady nemáme zpracovanou databázi členů komunistické strany. A bohužel v těch veřejných funkcích je spousta lidí, kteří si to do těch svých životopisů nedává. Nemají tu povinnost. Je to vlastně ochrana osobnosti a tam je, myslím, velikánský konflikt. Děkuji vám.
Thank you. The question in the center, yeah. We agreed to 5 questions, no more. Okay.
Jan Lichner-Czernic, European University Institute. I think we have to say that the report is coordinated by Carlos Closa and Clara Ramirez. And also my question to you is that, as far as I'm aware, 27 national rapporteurs prepared individual reports on member states. Now the question is, what will be the final version of the report? Will it be a watered-down version of the 27 reports, or it will be a collection of all 27 individual reports from member states? And I think this is quite important because... Thank you.
Thank you for the questions. And I would ask, first of all, Mrs. Hibashkova to answer to 2 questions which relies more to the conference and environment and materials and so on.
Děkuji pěkně za otázku, ale já myslím, že je skutečně věcí komise, aby odpověděla, nakolik využije detailní sborník, který bude publikován z této konference. To nemohu samozřejmě odpovědět já, ale jedna věc je tady důležitá. Pro tuto konferenci na základě podnětu Českého ústavu pro studium totalitních režimů připravili jiné obdobné instituty národní správy, takže jsme tady měli slovinskou národní správu, která je prakticky připravená už i v tištěné... litevskou, slovinskou, maďarskou. Takže je otázka, nakolik komise bude tyto národní zprávy, které byly připraveny a předneseny na této konferenci, moci využít. To já samozřejmě nemohu odpovědět. Druhý bod, kterého se chci dotknout, je otázka komunismu. Když jsme sjednávali rezoluci Svědomí Evropy a totalita, tak vlastně to byl první evropský, myslím, unijní dokument, který se této problematice věnoval. A to podstatné, co bylo na počátku toho sjednávání, bylo si vydiskutovat ten pojem, který budeme používat. Byly tam požadavky levice, především v německých Die Linke, abychom neustále hovořili o stalinismu nebo o stalinském komunismu. Byly tam požadavky jiných států, abychom hovořili jenom o totalitarianismu. Měli jsme i velký překladatelský problém pro český jazyk, protože to neustále všichni chtěli překládat jako totalitarianismus. A dělalo velký problém, aby mohlo být použito slovo totalita, které je v českém jazyce. Ale na konci, když budete číst tu rezoluci, i v tom, co je potom v závěru Evropské rady, je slovo jedno jediné. A je to slovo komunismus. Žádné jiné. Je to komunismus per se. A kdo byli komunisté? Komunisté jsou ti, kdo jsou členové komunistických stran. To je nepopiratelné. Co se týče třetí co se týče pana Badase, to je jenom pro naše zahraniční hosty, aby tomu rozuměli. My máme v České republice právní problém, protože na jedné straně byl přijat zákon o zločinnosti minulého režimu, ale na druhé straně nebyla zakázána komunistická strana a mezi tím je právní problém, ale ten bohužel nevyřešíme na této konferenci. A třetí věc, která si myslím je podotknutelná, která je velký problém České republiky, zase odpověď pro pana Badase, je skutečnost, že nejenom, že neznáme minulé členy komunistické strany, ale bohužel je problém zejména tam, že soudci, kteří soudí otázky vyplývající ze zločinného režimu, tak jak je to podle našeho zákona v České republice, mohli být členy komunistické strany a toto jejich členství nám známo bohužel není. To jenom na vysvětlenou pro zahraniční hosty. Děkuji.
I will give floor to each of the panelists to add, and then I will conclude with Mr. Gavriliadis, but I wanted to the answer who were the communists added my contribution. To the European Parliament, there is elected a member from Latvia who was the last first secretary of Communist Party of Latvia. He supported 91 August coup d'etat, which was conducted against Gorbachev. If they would win, then a person, I was one of the leaders of National Liberation Movement, I would be in the worst case executed, in the best case imprisoned. And it's very strange to have him, and once we were just confronting each other. Sometimes I feel that democracy goes too far in Europe. Now I would ask Andreas and Mr. Broad and Mr. Zwer if they have their contribution to your question.
Thank you. I would just like to briefly expand on the comments by Mr. von Haversfeldt, and thank you. Opposing totalitarianism doesn't necessarily make one a democrat. There is a very great difference between opposing communism for moral or principle reasons, which is the case with democrats, and in opposing communism because it is seen as a competitive form of totalitarianism, which is the case with many radical socialists, national socialists, Trotskyites, and even Islamists and other groups. And as far as these groups go, the discussion is more along the lines of which groups of people to oppress, which groups of people to terrorize. Should it be the Jews? Should it be the rich? Should it be women? And the conflicts between different strains of totalitarianism should never be mistaken for any sudden sympathy on their side for democracy or human rights. And the principal reasons why I oppose personally all forms of totalitarianism and intolerance also inevitably leads me to oppose any criminalization of use of ideologies, however odious or downright stupid or evil they may be. Sentencing criminals, though, is another thing entirely, and that's why the terminology is important. Thank you.
Děkuji. Já se omezím na pár poznámek k otázce Martina Badase, kdo byli komunisté a zda o tom něco víme. Já bych řekl, že tak špatně na tom zase nejsme v tom smyslu, že bychom nevěděli, kdo byli komunisté. Je to velmi komplikovaná otázka a já bych prosil, abychom v tom trošku přece jenom diferencovali. Ano, dá se říci, že všichni, že komunisté byli všichni členové komunistické strany. Já myslím, že každý z vás zná pár členů komunistické strany, kteří vnitřně nikdy komunisty nebyli a kteří tam byli z různých oportunních důvodů. Možná, že by se dalo, kdybychom dále o tom uvažovali, rozlišovat mezi takovými třemi velkými skupinami. Já dám jenom pár příkladů. Ti profesionální revolucionáři typu Gottwalda, Slánského, teď mluvím o československých poměrech, kteří byli tvrdí stalinisti, kteří byli ochotní obětovat kde koho v zájmu komunistické moci. Pak tady byla určitá vrstva lidí, kteří považovali za dané politické situace, za dané geostrategické situace, za nejlepší, aby tedy v Československu vládla nějaká forma komunistického režimu, aniž byli možná vnitřně přesvědčeni o všech pravdách onoho režimu. Mě napadá jako příklad generál Ludvík Svoboda, protože znám od řady jeho spolubojovníků, nebo jsem se bavil s ním a vím, že on nebyl osobně zlý člověk, sadista a tak dále, ale samozřejmě pracoval s tím režimem, stal se prezidentem této země a nesl spolu zodpovědnost také za zločiny toho komunistického režimu. A pak zde byla široká masa lidí, široká masa členů, v nichž také existovaly různé odstíny. Já vím, že v roce 1969-70 třeba někteří lidé použili čistku ve straně, která následovala po sovětské invazi k tomu, aby do té strany vstoupili, protože věděli, že tím způsobem, i když předtím nebyli komunisté, tím způsobem mohou dělat kariéru. To je velice komplikovaná záležitost. Něco z toho už víme o tom rozvrstvení, mimo jiné na základě orální historie. Tu dělá několik institucí v této zemi, mimo jiné Ústav pro studium totalitních režimů a Ústav pro soudobé dějiny. Nedávno vyšel tlustý svazek, který je založen na orální historii, tedy na svědectvích prostých lidí, jak se to tam formuluje, tedy lidí, kteří nezastávali nějaké významné funkce, ale pracovali v nejrůznějších sférách veřejného života nebo v dělnických povoláních a tak dále. A tam se najdou také typické příklady. Jinak kartotéka členů KSČ jistě existuje v Národním archivu.
Well, I will ask the representative of the commission to answer questions regarding the commission.
As regards first question on Stalinism, communism, totalitarianism, etc., for the commission, the study and the report focuses on totalitarianism. And the study we commissioned with Mr. Closa of the Spanish Institute covers all 27 member states with all totalitarian regimes. That means including Franquism, including Portugal, including Greece, and of course the occupation regimes all over Europe, member states suffered during the war. So it's not only for communism or Stalinism, it's for all totalitarianism. And there is no difference for me between totalitarianisms. As regards the procedures and the using of material, not only from this conference, but from other conference, the Commission is completely independent, is absolutely independent to use all the sources available. So we'll use, of course, all the conference which took place, the 2 years ago, the Prague, and the one today, the European Parliament works, the Council of Europe work. We don't have to forget that there was work, serious work, done in the Council of Europe about totalitarianism and communism, and of course all the other sources available, including the Closa Spanish report. But to answer directly your question, there will be one study. There will be no national studies. There will be one study because the national, what you call national studies, are contributions from the experts in the 27 member states to the Spanish Institute. So, as a commission, we know only one study, which will be the study from the Institute and will be published very soon. As regards the issue of just a small remark about people who are nominated as commissioners and if they're, let's say, a dirty past or whatever. Nobody knows the past of every person, but I think that the institutional setting of the European Union offers the maximum of guarantees. Absolute guarantee doesn't exist, but the maximum of guarantees of transparency are there, because we don't have to forget that the Commission is nominated after hearings before the European Parliament, where all members of the European Parliament from all political groups have the possibility to ask very direct and very difficult questions to the commissioners, and they're obliged to answer these questions. And we had also bad accidents in the past with an Italian commissioner and in the actual state with a Bulgarian candidate commissioners. So the system offers very good guarantees. And for transparency point of view, I think that's a very good thing.
But still, I should say that no one can imagine a commissioner, a former member or, and a leading member of Nazi Party to be nominated as a commissioner. We have examples that it happens with the leading, leading members of Communist Party. I would like to thank panelists. I would like to excuse to the audience and also to the next panel that we used 30 minutes more of the time which was scheduled for us. But I think that was a passionate discussion which enriched our vision about our past. And last, what I would say, we are not gathering here for witchcraft. We are gathering here to find a historical, legal and political assessment of communist totalitarianism. Thank you.